fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, a wonderful Wednesday to you. It is August the 11th, 2021. So glad you're with me on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Toll free. The call is free to talk to me. 1-888-9... I've been working on my rhyming. I should go into rap. 1-888-914-9149. You can also hit me up on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And we also have a show account too, at Cale Clark Show. The email address, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And we're going to do a little virtue signaling on the show today. Don't worry. It's nothing political. I want to actually talk about the virtues. I want to talk about virtue from a Catholic perspective. What is it? How do you get it? How do you live it? How do you pass it on? And this is something that I need to relearn and relearn all the time, because when I was growing up, I was kind of a nominal Catholic, and I was not well schooled in the virtues. It just wasn't part of, I went to a public school. We didn't really look into the virtues or the classics or anything like that. It was more of a practical nature of education. And when we talk about virtue, that word is thrown around in our culture willy-nilly. It's a synonym for all kinds of things, just basic goodness or some personality trait. For example, I'll often drive by schools and on their sign, you know, sort of on the front lawn, it'll have like a virtue of the month. And it'll say like, the virtue of the month is friendliness or you know, diversity or whatever that means, right? So, but the church, when the church talks about virtue, the church uses that word in a very precise way. So there are supernatural virtues, and there are human virtues. And there's this phrase that in the church, you've probably heard this, grace always builds on nature. I'm not sure who said that, probably St. Thomas Aquinas. You know, it's a good bet that if it's something profound like that, he probably said, I don't know if he was the first to say that, but grace builds on nature. And so these human qualities are really important as well, just for functioning in life. But it also makes us more receptive to the supernatural virtues. So I want to start off by talking about somebody who was once thought of as America's greatest dad, one of America's best dads, maybe even the world's. I'm talking about a guy named Earl Woods. And who could forget? Now, if you've never heard of Earl Woods, you certainly have heard of his son, Eldrick Woods, better known as Tiger. And hey, if you're named Eldrick, I'd change my name too, probably. Anyways, just kidding. But I'm a huge fan of Tiger's golf. And obviously we know that he's had some issues throughout his life. And I think a lot of it stems from his upbringing in so many ways. And who could forget, back in 1997, that scene that ensued just off the 18th green at Augusta National Golf Club after Tiger had won his first Masters tournament, going away, record score, father and son met in tearful embrace that seemed to last forever. Just gave each other a big bear hug. It was really an emotional moment. And of course, Tiger went on to become not only the world's most famous, most successful athlete, but he seemed to have the ultimate family life in his own right. His gorgeous then wife, Elin, their two beautiful kids, Sam Alexis and his son, Charlie. And if you've been following sports recently, you know that Charlie and his dad played in a golf tournament together last summer, and it was really cute. And Charlie's actually a pretty good player. And to complete the idyllic picture, the family was often photographed playing with their dogs, Taz and Yogi. Those are cool dog names. Tiger, as a husband, as a father, as a man, he seemed to be following in his father's footsteps. And in fact, he was. He was, but in a way that nobody ever could have imagined. Of course, we now know that Tiger's carefully constructed family image was a fraud. And recently I got to see the HBO documentary on Tiger that came out that was really well done. There weren't really any revelations to me because I'm a big Tiger fan, so I knew all the stuff. But it was really well directed, really well put together. And amid the myriad sordid revelations of Tiger's adulterous affairs, that wound up with him getting sort of busted by his wife, Elin, and, you know, running his car into the fire hydrant in Florida, all that sort of stuff. As all his, all the women he was having affairs with, they all kind of came out of the woodwork, told their story in the media. But one woman emerged from Tiger's past, and she was interviewed in the HBO documentary. Her relationship with Tiger by far preceded or antedated any of the rest. And that was his high school sweetheart. And she told about how when he was a teenager, Tiger would call her on the phone and he'd just weep. He'd just dissolve into tears because he discovered that his father was having an affair, cheating on his mom. And it just destroyed him. It just absolutely killed him inside. And Earl Woods had already left one wife and another family before he met and married Tiger's mom. And it was also not so well known that as soon as Tiger, who was Earl and Coltita Woods' only child, as soon as he turned professional in 1996, his parents, they separated. They no longer lived together. It was kind of an open secret. But they would both show up to cheer their son on together in tournaments. And so Tiger knew when he was growing up, amidst the revelations of his own dad's secret life, the only reason his parents had really stayed together was because of him. As if his life didn't already have enough pressure, what with his dad making pronouncements like, Tiger will be more important for the world than Gandhi, you'll see. Wow, no pressure there, kid. But maybe the way that Tiger will become so important is as a cautionary tale, especially for parents. Because the words of a parent are not nearly as important as their actions, as their example. And kids, if you're a parent, especially if you're a parent of teenagers, I'm not looking forward to those times, but hopefully they'll be just wonderful. But kids, I know what I was like as a teenager, and it's true that kids may not always seem to be listening to what you say as a parent, but they really are in different ways. They are all ears and all eyes when it comes to what you're doing. And what they want to know is, do your beliefs match up with your behavior? Do your beliefs match up with your behavior? Because kids are like lawyers. They really are. They're looking for holes in your argument. They want to badger the witness. And they watch. They know. So when it comes to this idea of virtue and how we pass it on to our kids, or anybody else for that matter, well, you can't give what you don't have. And even if you don't have kids, if you're listening today, if you don't have children, that doesn't mean that this information isn't for you, because being a virtuous person is part of following Christ. It's part of being a Catholic Christian. So none of us are exempt from this. We have to become more Christ-like, and that means automatically becoming more virtuous. So, but just to talk about kids for a second, obviously, you know, if your kids have been baptized in the church, you made certain promises as a parent that you have to prepare them for not just life in this world, but most importantly, for eternal life. And Jim Stenson, who writes a lot about parenting issues, he often says to parents, hey, remember, you're raising an adult, not a child. You're raising an adult. And that's hard to remember sometimes when the kids are really young and they're really cute and they're really cuddly. But you're really raising a future adult. And not just a future adult. We need to go even beyond that. You're raising a person who is going to live for all eternity somewhere. That's a huge challenge. Now, before you get to, you know, that's pretty scary. You know, God will help us. We always have to remember that. So, again, one of the biggest loopholes that kids look for is inconsistencies between the way that parents live and the way the parents are telling their kids to live and the way that the parents actually live. So what kids really want to know is, do you practice what you preach? Do you practice? They're like lawyers. Like I said, they badger the witness. And I do mean witness, because they're looking for witnesses. They're looking for a lived example of life, of Catholicism before their eyes. So they know it's not merely a nice theory, but a credible way of life. 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. So when it comes to trying to pass on values, beliefs, virtues, we can't have some sort of a variation of do as I say, not as I do. That's not going to work, especially when kids get older, they become teenagers, because they can smell baloney a mile away. Again, they're looking for integrity, a walk that matches the talk. And maybe Tiger Woods didn't see that enough, going back to his story and his father, Earl. And I remember when he, back in 2009 or so, when he got busted for his affairs, he made this, I don't know whether this is a great PR move or not, but he made this nationally televised mea culpa speech, a stage press conference where he said, I did not act in accordance with the values with which I was raised. Well, maybe that's not quite true, because it turns out he was acting in accordance with his dad's values, just not the ones that his dad talked about, but the ones his dad actually lived by. So in a sense, and hopefully things have changed since then, but it seems like Tiger, in a sense, even though he was a man, he wasn't really grown up inside. And this is where we have to go back to that phrase from Jim Stenson, the parenting expert: you're not raising a child, you're raising an adult. And so we've got to be able to make our kids, help our kids become free, responsible, giving people of good judgment, tough-minded character. And that's one way of talking about the virtues in kind of a more secular way. But in order to do this, we have to live them out. We have to love Christ. We have to have a relationship with him and show how to give our hearts to Jesus. This is supernatural virtue, and how Jesus gives us certain graces to do that. We're going to talk about that in just a second. And then we have to teach our kids to use their personal freedom to choose what is best from a human perspective and also from a supernatural perspective. And this requires human virtues in a lot of ways. So we need supernatural virtues, we need human virtues. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit about this from sort of a top-down approach on the Cale Clark Show here on Relevant Radio. I'm going to talk, first of all, about supernatural virtues. We're going to take a top-down approach, and then I'll talk about the human virtues next. Even though the supernatural ones are built on the human virtues, I'm going to start at the top. So let me just say that the church, when it talks about supernatural virtues, these are special graces that God gives us. God gives the soul, really, for the accomplishment of particular objectives. And these virtues kind of live in our soul, and they can get weak if they're not fed, and they can also be strengthened. And so when you talk about these supernatural virtues, there's really two kinds. There are the theological virtues, and those are the sort of the big ones: faith, hope, and love. Sometimes it's called faith, hope, and charity. Charity being another way of, I like to say love, just because charity, you know, what does that really mean? That's in some ways an outdated term. It's not really, but I just like to say faith, hope, and love. So these are theological virtues because they pertain to your relationship with God. So let's talk about faith for a second. Faith is really, another word for faith is trust. Just like the Divine Mercy Chaplet, Jesus, I trust in you. That's a great way to explain faith. But it's also, faith is also a grace. We need God's grace in order to even have faith. It's a gift too. And so scriptures talk about this. It's all over the Bible. Luke 1:45 and John chapter 11, verses 25 and 26, Ephesians 2:8. There's some places where we talk about the gift of faith. Hope. What is hope? Well, hope is believing that God is going to keep his promises, especially when it comes to his final salvation for us. So if we have nothing to hope for, I think it was Mark Twain who said that people can only live for about 3 minutes without hope. We need hope for the future. And so let's talk about love for a second. Love, the last one of the three theological virtues, which is also known as charity. What this does is love affects our will, and it gives us the impetus, it's the engine for our will to love God and to love our neighbor. As Jesus said in the gospel, love the Lord your God with all your mind, heart, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. We do need that too. We do need to love ourselves as well. And you know, the silly acronym JOY, Jesus first, others second, yourself last, that spells joy. It's true. It's in the gospel. So there's lots of scriptures that talk about this as well in the book of Deuteronomy, which is really what Jesus was quoting there, but loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4-6, You can also read about this in Matthew 22, Matthew 25, Mark 12, Romans 13, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, that famous chapter on love that's often read at weddings, but it's not about romantic love at all. We talked about that on the Faith Explained program. So at the end of 1 Corinthians 13, St. Paul says, these three remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. Because the other two, we're not going to need them in heaven. We won't need faith. Faith will be replaced by possessing it. You know, faith will be replaced by sight. Hope, we won't need to hope for something we're going to get in the future. We'll have it in heaven. But love will always remain because God is love. And so we will love God. God will love us. We'll love each other in God, in the church. I mean, it's awesome to think about. So those are the big three supernatural virtues. But we also need to talk about what are the moral virtues, because this is part of the supernatural virtues as well. And I remember reading a little piece about this on Catholic.com, and it basically said that the moral virtues are called the moral virtues because they help us live the moral law that Jesus calls us to. So let me just lay these out for you. You've probably heard of these: prudence, justice, temperance, fortitude. This is the tough-mindedness. These are also known as the cardinal virtues, by the way. The moral virtues are also known as the cardinal virtues, which comes from a Latin word, cardo, which means hinge. Because all the other moral virtues hinge on these. So these are the basics that we need. So I think we'll take these apart for you and tell you what each of them mean. Prudence. Okay, what is prudence? Well, I think we kind of know what it is. We have this sense of what it means to be prudent. But it really means it's the grace to form right judgments. It's the grace that we need to form a proper judgment. Justice, well, you know, it's often been said that justice is giving the other person their due, whether it's God, whether it's others, maybe even ourselves. Justice helps us to deal fairly, justly, equitably with other people. What about temperance? Well, we kind of know what that means. Temperance helps us to control our sense appetites and to look at what we have, what we've been given in God's creation, and not abuse it, not overindulge, to make proper use of these things. I'm always reminded of the quote from G.K. Chesterton when he said, "We thank God for beer by not drinking too much of it." Great quote. It's a really, really great quote from G.K. Chesterton. He had so many. He'd be so good on Twitter if he was alive today. Well, what about fortitude? What about fortitude? Well, fortitude is that virtue that helps us to keep going, this tough-mindedness, perseverance, despite everything that can try to knock us off track, whether it's temptation or whatever it may be. Want to give up? And there's some other virtues as well, which aren't necessarily part of the cardinal virtues or these hinge virtues, but there's also humility. There's also patience. And these are all mentioned in the scriptures. Patience, you can read about in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 36 and 37 especially. Obedience, that's one of these moral virtues as well. Kids need this especially. We'll talk about this in a minute. Purity, or maybe it's more archaic form, chastity. Sounds like a chastity belt or something. No, I prefer to just say purity. Piety. Okay, what does it mean to be pious? Well, it means to be devoted to God. That's maybe a better way to look at it. And then this ability to be truthful, this ability to speak truth. The Hebrews have this word for this, emeth. And when you know somebody, when you meet somebody who's truthful, you can kind of sense it. You know it. You know you're touching truth. And this is mentioned in Ephesians chapter 4. So these are these moral virtues. So we talked about the theological virtues, the big three, faith, hope, and love. We've also talked about some of these cardinal virtues, these moral virtues of prudence, justice, temperance, fortitude, cardinal virtues. And there's a few more that we can kind of tack on to these. But what about the human virtues? And how can we pass these on to other people, especially if you're a parent? How can you pass these on to your kids? We're going to talk about that in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, 1-888-914-9149. Why don't you give me a call? Let me know how you've been able to pass these on to other people. Maybe even how you've learned to practice them in your own life. 888-914-9149. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Cale Clark Show on this Wednesday, 888-914-9149. We're talking about human and supernatural virtue, how to get it, how to live it, how to pass it on, especially pass it on to our kids, if you have kids. But even if you don't, we're responsible for our neighbors. Yes, we are our brother's keeper. We've got to share the gospel, and part of this is understanding that grace builds on nature. Sometimes it's easier to share the gospel if somebody already is practicing like sort of good human qualities, good human virtues. And this quote, I speculated that it was from St. Thomas, and it was a pretty good guess. Producer Lucas has messaged me saying that this actually comes from Thomas Aquinas' commentary on, I'm going to mess this up, Boethius. I think I have an album by him somewhere. He was great in the 70s. So Boethius, it's called On the Trinity. And St. Thomas's comment is, although man is inclined to an end by nature, yet he cannot attain that end by nature, but only by grace, because of the exalted character of the end. The always profound angelic doctor. So that's pretty cool. We're going to go to the phones now. Dan is calling from Dodge County, Wisconsin. Hey, Dan.
I have to correct you a little bit. Boethius played right field for the Cleveland Indians in the 50s.
And I heard he had power to all fields, too. So
just to be more serious, you were talking about, you know, parents being a good example. My parents were a good example. Catholic couple. My dad was a convert, in fact.
Oh, no kidding.
He became Catholic due to the good influence of his commanding officer in the U.S. Army. And then he met Mom, and they weren't fanatics, but it was weekly Mass and Holy Days and monthly confession. And we were all active at the parish growing up. It wasn't that far away. Very, very Catholic neighborhood, and one sibling of mine just has rejected the Catholic faith, and
really,
the children were baptized Catholic, were raised outside of the faith, and I took the nieces and nephews out for ice cream one Sunday when they were little, and you know how children spill the beans sometimes.
Yeah,
they said they were telling me we go to a different church every Sunday, and I said different parish or what? Oh, no, different denomination. They were shopping for churches for a while. And they got into some radical Lutheran church that's abortion is okay and homosexual marriage is okay. And her big excuse is, it was a scandal with the priests and this type of thing. And we don't know what to think of it.
Yeah, you know, and this, you know, we need to pray for her, obviously, and pray for your sister, and, you know, make some sacrifices for her, spiritual sacrifices. I don't know if she's tuned you out, Dan. I'm assuming you tried to talk to her about this at some level.
Well, I used to, and my dad would say, if you have to watch out, you turn into an Irish Monsignor if we don't keep track of you. So I've just kind of hushed up about it and prayed for it, and I think it's got something to do with her education. I think she took a lot of political science classes and switched political affiliations and became pro-abortion, and there's too many people in the world, according to her, and all this type of thing. And
yeah, which is not true, by the way. But yeah, it's true what Jesus said. You know, it's very hard to reach people in your own family. You know, a prophet is not accepted in his own home and among his own kin. And sometimes it's hard for our relatives to take us seriously when it comes to this stuff. So I find a good methodology is to, when you're praying for her, pray that someone else comes into her life that she'll listen to. And this is really what St. Monica did for her son, St. Augustine. And her prayers were answered because, you know, he wasn't listening to her, but he did listen to Ambrose, St. Ambrose. And all three of them became canonized saints, of course, as you know. And Ambrose was a guy that Augustine just kind of hung on his every word, and he respected him, and he listened to what he had to say. So maybe if your sister meets somebody like that. And the other thing, too, I would say is that I think a lot of parents, like if their kids do fall away from the faith, they think somehow it's their fault, and they beat themselves up a lot over that, I think. And so if you're a parent out there and you're listening to this, you know, don't fall into that trap. You know, and maybe there were things that you could have done better, but you have to have some grace for yourself as well. The past is over. The question is, what do you do now? And a lot of times parents can pull out all the stops, they do everything right. And I know a lot of families like this where the kids just kind of still wander off. And I know the Bible says, you know, if you train a child in the way he should go, he'll never depart from it, or he'll come back at the end, hopefully at least. But that doesn't always happen. And so a lot of parents feel a lot of guilt, and sometimes there's nothing you can do because obviously these kids have their own free will, and sometimes they choose for various reasons to walk away. And so it's important for parents to have grace for themselves too, and understand that it's not always their fault, and sometimes not even close to being their fault. So I think
it's...
Go ahead, Dan.
We say kids, but she's in her 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this has been going on for 30 years. It's kind of the don't ask, don't tell deal in our family. My folks were always afraid that if they took her aside, she'd never stop in again. So.
Yeah, that's often a tough situation as well. And then some tough choices really have to be made. We have to put God first. And love really involves truth telling. If somebody's not open to listening, I don't think we should, you know, try to ram it down their throat or anything. If they're not going to listen, if they don't want to listen, but I think you try to keep the conversation going is always key. And I have a friend who has a teenage daughter she's not a teenager anymore. She's in her 20s, but he was telling me that one day the family always went to 9 a.m. Sunday Mass every single week. Everybody piled in the station wagon. They went to Mass. And then I think it was Christmas morning, his one daughter said, I'm not going, Dad. And she just didn't get ready to go. And it was too late. Like, they were running late for Mass. He's like, okay, I can't deal with this now. But she was like 16 or something. And he's like, I can't really like force her to go. So he said, okay, we'll talk about this later. And so from that moment on, she's never gone back. But they still talk. The lines of conversation are open. I think as long as somebody's willing to talk, there's always an opportunity, right? And we can never put God out of the picture, because God can still reach them somehow. And so that's really important to know. So Dan, thank you very much for that call. Dan calling from Wisconsin. Really important. So we're talking about how to inculcate virtue, how to pass this on, especially to our kids. We're going to go now to Mary, who is calling from Indiana. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I'm just calling to say how wonderful it is to be on. But the first thing I want to say is, when you're a couple and you're married, the best thing is for the husband and wife to show a good example to the children as best they can.
Yep.
But no matter what goes on, love is important, understanding and generosity. If you love, no matter what your brother, sister, friend, or neighbor do to you, but as a family, brothers and sisters will have division. They will have arguments. But if you keep love, even though when the Joseph was sold into slavery, he still loved his brothers. He put that symbol in the bag, and he brought them into the fold and fed them and gave them grain and things they needed. Then they came into the facility where he was. And he understood the situation. But also he was generous. God looks at what you do. No matter what the other person did to you, he hit me, he did this, he did that, you must love him. Put that aside. Understand that we all are human. We all have frailties. No one has not sinned. We all can be generous. Give something that you want to give to someone. Don't give anything to someone you don't want yourself. and I guarantee your life will change. And prayer. If you're feeling bad on the job or you're sick, still pray. You might not go to church. Whatever race, color you are, still pray to Jesus Christ. He doesn't look at color. He doesn't look at what you have, your finances. He looks at the heart, and God will take care of you. Amen.
Oh, that's a great word, Mary. And yeah, the example of Joseph, we recently on our sister program that I host, The Faith Explained, looked at the book of Genesis. And I just love the story of Joseph, how he forgave his brothers, revealed himself to them. And they thought, oh, man, he's going to drop the hammer. But no, he just wanted to reconcile with them. And so God is always ever forgiving. We have to model that in our family relationships. And I think also it was one thing you mentioned earlier, Mary, the love of husband and wife. That's an example that kids do pick up on, and God willing, if God calls them to marriage themselves, they will remember that. There's a parenting author by the name of Meg Meeker, and for those of you listening out there, I find her books really interesting. She's got a book called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. I think it's called Boys Should Be Boys. I can't remember what it's called, but I think that's what it's called. Producer Lucas, you can back me up on this, but she talks a lot about the importance of how, you know, when somebody's looking for a spouse, the example of their parents is so huge. Girls just kind of subliminally almost look for someone who's like their father. And if they didn't have a good relationship with their dad, that often leads to poor dating relationships. We all kind of know this. But she's got a lot of data to back all that up. So I do recommend her writing. She's really interesting. And thank you very much for that call, Mary. That was Mary calling from Indiana. From the heartland, from Hoosier country. And yeah, Hoosier was on the other day. I was watching that. The great Gene Hackman. You know, Gene Hackman retired from acting? He's writing novels now, apparently. But anyway, so he's in his 70s now, I think. But great, great, great talent. That was a weird segue. But back to what we're talking about. And speaking of Meg Meeker, another person I mentioned, Jim Stenson, who's written a lot of books on parenting. And when it comes to this topic, he says, back to this thought that he has, this is kind of his key thought, that you're raising adults, not children. He talks about the three stages, going from childhood to adulthood, and the mindset that's there. And I think this is part of the human virtues. We're going to talk about the human virtues in a second. How do we get there? And he says, look, when you're a child basically asks this question, what can you do for me? Because a child's world completely revolves around himself or herself, and that's... There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's where they're at. They need to mature. The child in their own world is the center of the universe, believes that others exist to serve her needs, cater to her whims, whether it be feed me, play with me, entertain me. But unfortunately, some people never evolve to the next stage, which is adolescence. So how do you get from childhood to adolescence? If a child says, what can you do for me? Then an adolescent says, I can do it for myself. This is where a little bit of independence kicks in, the journey from dependence to independence. And a lot of people, unfortunately, think this is the final step, but it's not. It's only the second step. So what can you do for me is a child's point of view. An adolescent says, I can do it for myself, but that's not the goal. And my dad used to say this to me, and maybe you heard this growing up as well. He used to say, my goal is to have you out of the house at 18 and out on your own. And these days, hey, some parents are happy if their kids move out by age 40. Or maybe they never move out. I don't know. They're still in the musty basement. I don't know. But that's not the goal, though. That's not the goal. That's simply independence. So in this second stage, this I can do it for myself, it's part of the growth process, but it's still not complete because it's ultimately still concerned with self. Because a child might say, what can you do for me? An adolescent might say, I can do it for myself. But the bottom line, the common denominator, is still concerned for self. And many adults even remain tragically trapped somewhere between these two stages. Going back to Tiger Woods, a great example. That, you know, and hopefully he's changed, hopefully he's matured, but, you know, in the late, you know, aughts, you know, from, you know, 2000, 2009, he was still pretty narcissistic. As a professional, he had all the character traits in his job that one would want to see. Determination, hard work, never quit, perseverance, success, excellence. In that sense, he's a lot like a lot of people that we work with from day to day. Not that I work with at Relevant Radio. Heavens, no. I mean, we're all mature. We're practically canonizable right now. But maybe in your cubicle, maybe in your office, it's a little bit different. And there's a lot of people in our culture that, I think it was Peter Kraft who coined the term, they're highly skilled barbarians. You know, they're professionally very mature, they're competent, but they're highly skilled barbarians. They may know how to do a lot of stuff, but ethically, morally, they're still very immature, very incompetent in a moral sense. Maybe monetarily they're very wealthy, but maybe morally they're bankrupt. And so this is kind of what Tiger Woods was like back when he got busted for all his affairs. And at this sort of mea culpa press conference that he called, one of the things that I remember he said was that he said, I felt entitled to do the things that I did. So it's kind of like saying the laws of morality don't apply to me. Why? Because I'm me. Because I'm Tiger. Now, it may be easy to dismiss him as an extreme case, but believe me, there are a lot of people out there, even in the church, who are young people who are prone to the same kind of self-deception. It may not manifest itself in the same way through the same behaviors, but trust me, it's there. So part of the deal is coming to terms with reality as how it's actually laid out, that there is a God. We can't reject the created order. And we're responsible to the Creator. And a lot of people don't want to do that because that would mean admitting I'm not the center of the universe, that it doesn't really revolve around me after all. That would involve actually growing up. But we have to grow up if we're going to get to that final stage, the last stage of growth. From childhood, remember, child says, what can you do for me? And adolescent says, I can do it for myself. But the last stage, and this is the goal, for all of us, is full mature adulthood. Because, and especially when it comes to parenting, we got to remember we're raising adults, not children. So what is that final stage? Well, an adult says, what can I do for you? A child says, what can you do for me? An adolescent says, I can do it for myself. But an adult says, what can I do for you? And this is true maturity. This is real maturity. Concern for others. Looking outside oneself to the needs of others. Starting with, remember, God first. Now, not that God needs anything, but we have to, first of all, worship Him. Jesus first, others second, yourself last. Remember that? Joy. It is a recipe. It sounds corny, but it is a recipe for happiness in this world. This is what the kingdom of God is all about. Jesus' main message, when He went around preaching, was the kingdom of God. And what is the kingdom of God? Well, one way I like to explain it, it's the kingdom of right relationships. That's what the kingdom of God is all about, having a right relationship with God and a right relationship with others. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Okay, that's having the right relationship with God. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love God, Jesus first. Love others, love your neighbor, and love yourself too. But that's in the third place. You got to love yourself, but it's very much in the third place. It's not the most important thing. So this is the maturity that we need to inculcate in others by forming people in these human virtues, especially as parents. That's a huge responsibility. Because if you're a Catholic parent, what God is looking for from you is a lot different from what the rest of the world is looking for. Other parents may care more about the letters at the end of their children's names. You know, MD, MBA, PhD. That's what they want, the letters at the end of their kids' names. But we want the letters at the beginning of the name, ST, saint. That's the goal of Catholic parenting, that your child become a saint. Well, who are the saints, by the way? The word saint comes from the Greek word hagios, which means the holy ones. And it doesn't mean becoming weird, you know, some strange, like Ned Flanders on The Simpsons, some guy who's just the odd Christian around the corner. No, it just means being the best version of yourself, the person you were created to be. But we have to do that. There's no option. It's not something that we can put off. In the book of Hebrews in chapter 13, it says, without holiness, no one will see the Lord. If we want to get to heaven, we got to be holy. If we want our kids to get to heaven, we've got to help them to become saints. And so this is the goal. It's the most important role of Catholic parents. And this is what we saw, for those who got married in the church, it's what we solemnly promised before God at our own weddings. part of the wedding vow in the Catholic Church is, will you accept children as a gift from God? Will you raise them according to the laws of Christ and His Church? So this is what we have to do. We have to do our part to help them develop in the faith, understanding that they do have freedom, especially as they get older and they reach the age of reason and physical maturity. And so we will answer to God for how we did. Did we try to participate with God? Did we try to allow His grace to help us? But at the end of the day, the most important thing is never to give up on anybody. St. Monica never gave up on her son, St. Augustine. He was far from a saint at the time. He was one of the world's greatest sinners, but he became not only a saint, but a bishop, a doctor of the Church. And she's a great example. And so they're not perfect. They're going to make mistakes. Sometimes those are the best learning experiences that come through mistakes. But most of all, they need to know that you love them. Your love never fails, just as God's love for us never fails. And never stop modeling that life of Catholic integrity for them. So this is all really exciting. But we're going to talk about some really specific practical ways how it can help build those human virtues right after this break. 1-888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. 888-914-9149. We're talking about virtue from a Catholic perspective, what it is, how to get it, how to live it, how to pass it on to others, especially if you're a parent, how to pass it on to your kids. Hey, producer Lucas, I've got a quiz for you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this is like Trivial Pursuit here.
Okay.
See if you know the answer to this. Where were the first French fries made?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Is it...
It should be pretty obvious to you.
France?
No. Okay. The first French fries were not made in France. They were made in Greece.
Greece. Interesting. Okay.
Get it? Greece?
Oh, I see what you did.
Ah, I gotcha.
Is part of raising a virtuous child having good jokes?
Well, that's definitely a dad joke. I'll tell you that. But it's one of my favorites. Well, you know, it did come from Greece, you know, not bubbling up, but the actual country was the Greek philosophers. And maybe one of the greatest of all time was Plato. And Plato wrote a lot about moral and character formation. And he said this. He said, when one is a vicious man, that is, a man of bad character, one is led by their passions. Such a person is not in control of his life. He does not determine his actions in the light of the goals he wishes to achieve. So this concept, I do whatever I feel like doing, that is not what a truly free person would say. So this is really the cry of a person who does not rule his own life, who doesn't direct his own life, but rather just follows his own whims or her own whims, subject to the inclinations of the passions, whatever happens to be rising to the top at the moment, and essentially becomes a slave to one's passions. So this is important to know. You can't be happy ultimately like this. It doesn't work because you're not free. You're not capable of directing your own life or the lives of others. And I remember reading a piece about, and we're going to get real practical here at the end of the show, how to actually inculcate virtue in our children, especially the human virtues. We talked a lot about the supernatural virtues, but the human virtues, I read a piece by Laura Berquist about this, who writes a lot about homeschooling and stuff like that. And she mentions this book, and this is a book that a lot of people go to when it comes to character building for kids. It's a book by this guy named David Isaacs. And in his book, Character Building, he gives a suggested, he lays out a plan of how to cultivate virtues at each age of a child's life. And he starts off with the virtue of obedience. And that's key. That's key, obviously, for parenting, right? And really what he does is he tries to draw an analogy between the stages of intellectual development in a person and also their character development. So, for example, in the earliest years of a person's life, he suggests that the virtues that you really need to work on when a kid is like, say, from 4 to 7 years old, obedience, sincerity, telling the truth, and that's huge. That's huge. And order. Obedience, sincerity, and order. And that, you know, my kid's kind of in that phase right now. Michaela's in that age group, so I concur with this 100%. So these are really the first learning tools. Without these first initial human virtues of obedience, sincerity, and order, you really can't get too far ahead. You really can't get beyond. These are key tools that unlock so much for you. You can't build your life without these. So it's almost like trying to assemble IKEA furniture without the Allen key, you know, that little thing. So these virtues are fundamental to what's going to come later. So the second stage is the 8 to 12-year-old range. And so David Isaacs, in his book Character Building, he suggests that character development in this age group needs to concentrate on virtues that, in particular, strengthen one's character. And again, he kind of relates it to the intellectual formation that you get at this stage of life as well. So he talks about patience. He talks about perseverance. If you don't have patience and perseverance, you're never going to be able to see what you need to see, learn what you need to learn, retain what you need to retain, you know, like all those catechism questions you need to memorize. You also need the virtue, the human virtue of responsibility to do your schoolwork, or else you're not going to achieve your goal. So that's in the 8 to 12-year-old range. And then in the next section of life, the 13 to 15-year-old stage, he says you really need to work on virtues that help a person deal with logic. Because at this point in time, you start getting into logical arguments and start asking the question, why? And this is where a lot of independence kicks in. I remember at this age when I was, and my mother can attest to this, I was the courtroom lawyer. You know, I was Tom Cruise, you know, and A Few Good Men, just thundering at Kendrick, you know, why do I have to do this? You know, and so many parents, they discover that their formerly docile, sweet, compliant young kid suddenly develops, you know, becomes G. Gordon Liddy, right? So what do you do with this? Well, you need to channel that interest in logic and reason, but at the same time, encourage the virtues of moderation. These are human virtues: moderation, respect, simplicity, and modesty. Okay, and then the last stage, David Isaacs calls this the rhetorical stage. This is the 10th through 12th grade student. And so this is when you really got to sharpen the ability to make an argument, try to search for what's truly noble. And yeah, and that's what he says. So the one of the big keys that he puts in his book is that your character really builds on your temperament, that your temperament is the material out of which your character is made. And that's kind of interesting, because kids do have different temperaments. We all have different temperaments. And if you've got a kid who's, for example, and Laura Berquist talks about this, if your child is naturally sensitive and generous, but they're not industrious, they're not orderly, that's going to be a problem. So you need to focus on tasks that are going to grow in their area of weakness. And how do you help them maintain order? So you might want to say, hey, you got to pick up your bedroom. Don't stop a task until you're finished. You know, lay that, you know, it's not the foundation stone that's important. It's the capstone. It's the last stone. Finish your task. Things like that. So work on the virtues in which they are weak. There's so much to say on this, and there's way more than we could talk to in this short program here. But at any rate, we've just got to be consistent about what we're expecting. She talks a lot about, Laura Berquist talks a lot about, you know, being really following through on negative consequences, punishing, you know, bad behavior, whether it's, okay, you can't have iPad time or whatever because you didn't clean your room, or maybe give them a bit of a reward when they do what you ask them to do. I don't know. There's a lot to think about here. So for those of you who are interested, he kind of lays out this chart of what human virtues to emphasize by different age group. David Isaacs, in his book, Building Character, is one to check out. It's kind of a classic in the field. A lot of people talk about this. So yeah, there's a bit of a science to it as well. There's the supernatural virtues, which come to us, you know, from God, with grace. And there's also human virtues that, you know, sometimes we've got them, sometimes we need to work on them. And I'm happy that I have a very virtuous producer in Lucas Holt, a very dedicated and diligent producer. So thanks for what you do, man.
I'm trying. Not quite there yet. But
well, no. We've only got a few moments left. But what are your thoughts on this, Lucas? What do you think?
Well, I think that I really liked Mary's point when she called in, Mary from Indiana, about the example that parents set, because I know that's been a huge influence in my own life, especially as a kid. Like, you do what you see. So, if you're living, if you're trying to live out the way, if you're loving your spouse and, really trying to imitate Christ and in that sacrificial love, then your parent or your kids will pick up on that, even though it may not seem like it. I think subconsciously they'll pick
for
up
sure.
on that.
For sure. The power of example. The Catholic faith isn't so much taught, it's caught. That's what my friend Cardinal Collins likes to say, and I can't agree more. And I'm so happy that you joined me for this hour on The Cale Clark Show. Lucas Holt produced. Patrick Alok took your phone calls. Timmery's up next. See you tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.